Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Welcome back to the worst year ever. My name's Kaitzel.
It is.
That was a weird intro.
No, it was great. Got your name
cool.
out there?
Got my name out there. I introduced the show. What's your name?
Oh, it's Cody Johnston.
That's right, it is.
Yes, thank you.
And joining us, as always, is...
I'm dying.
I'm dying.
Robert's not feeling
Robert's
very well.
Robert's not feeling well.
I'm Robert Evans, and I... was recovering from the crud that I caught from all of those gun owners in Virginia. And then I had to do a live show in San Francisco and just ruined my voice. Yeah. So I am going to sit back and listen to my friends today.
I'm sure you'll have some things to chirp in.
I think you sound great, but
you sound beautiful. You look beautiful too. He's wrapped up in a nice cozy robe. He's got his tissues.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We miss you being here in LA for sure, but at this moment, I'm glad you're there. Sorry.
Yeah, I would have gotten you all sick, and I would have done it on purpose.
I know.
Yeah.
I know you would have.
Instead of throwing machete, you'd be throwing germs.
You'd
at
be
us.
Throwing your germs right in our faces.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Get your chucking germs out.
So this week. We wanted to dig a little bit deeper into the differences between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Personally, I feel like I've been talking about this a lot lately. Cody and I talked about it a little bit on our other show last week. And I know it might seem like we're harping on Warren and Sanders a lot, which I guess we are.
Sure.
But I think that the majority of our listeners are probably split between the two of them. And voting starts for some of you guys like now, so it feels like now is the time to have this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. And I think it's
I love
also...
conversations.
Conversations are good. Discourse is great. Everybody has a good time during it. Nobody hates it. Nobody gets mad
so
or hurt.
Easy.
I think it's a good time because it's a constant reminder of the fact that this is the worst year ever for everybody. And I know that in the past few weeks, at least for me, and leading into the 2020 year that we're currently in, it has felt so much like 2016.
Yeah.
And it always has a little bit. Like, 2016 never really ended.
It never really will.
It never will. We're stuck there.
Is
and
that
that's,
the OG worst year ever?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It was the worst year. And we're reliving just like heightened versions of it every year.
As so they
the
do get
pass.
Worse.
They get worse. But that was like, all right, it's time.
Yeah.
It's time for only bad years from now on.
Yeah. Yeah. This conversation definitely feels... like we're back in 2016 in a lot of ways.
Yeah, especially now. Like recently, it's been like, oh, by the way, we're going to do it again. It's going to be miserable.
And I guess part of the reason why I think it's important, I'm going to spin it positive here,
ooh,
is that it's these actually are two of the most progressive presidential candidates that we've ever seen. And we're lucky to have them. I think a lot of my frustration around this conversation comes from the fact that a lot of people seem to forget that really quickly. We're all very quick to paint Warren as a liar and Bernie as an asshole or whatever it is that people want to frame Bernie as. And the media exacerbates this. And soon everyone is just pissed off at each other. And so I just wanted to say that, take a moment of appreciation for being fortunate enough to have two great candidates and to even be having these conversations. We don't actually have to take a moment.
Yeah, no, that was a moment.
Yeah.
So you're saying that she's not necessarily a neoliberal shill and he's not necessarily a sexist anti-Semite?
Exactly. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle there. Also, I mean, this is a scary conversation for me to have. I every time we talk about it, I get a lot of shit online from some of you guys. And okay, we're all worked up about all of it. But part of this conversation, I hope, is to like... show a way to have these conversations in a more productive manner.
Well, Katie, before you get into it, I want to try and just detract perhaps some heat from you by starting this episode with my contention that Bernard Sanders was the real gunman on the grassy knoll who shot dead JFK.
Oh, so God. Bold statement.
Not Ted Cruz's dad?
No, no. Ted Cruz's dad was the ammo man, though.
Oh,
okay, okay.
Wow.
Okay. That's called bipartisanship right there.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Well, Robert's predictions.
And that's why Bernie should be president.
Mm-hmm. He's going to bring us all together.
It's just, it's all full circle. And like, I also want to say, I still don't know who I'm voting for. A lot of people are like, oh, you're only going to ever vote for Warren. I think, no. I feel the need to defend her because I think that she gets mischaracterized. And I like her. But it doesn't mean that I'm necessarily voting for her. So anyway, that's my two cents on all that.
Makes sense. Because I mean, like you were saying, like, she's not Hillary Clinton. There are issues I have, but like, it's not the same. And seeing that it's treated as the same thing is probably frustrating.
So, okay. Like I mentioned last week on Even More News, we talked about this whole he said, she said, woman running for president controversy thing. And then we had a larger conversation about the toxic climate online surrounding this whole election and the sexism that we still seem to be struggling with as a party. And it was an interesting conversation. And I think that a lot of you guys also agreed. So we wanted to keep that going. But yeah, if you remember, CNN reported that last year Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders had some sort of a meeting to discuss policies and got into a dispute as to whether or not a woman could win the presidency. Bernie denied the allegations, saying that it was a discussion about how Trump would manipulate any weaknesses. And again, I don't want to spend too much time talking about this right now. Yeah, it just really disappointed me how so many people's initial reaction was to immediately jump to, she's a liar. And then there was just this huge aggressive and disproportionate online blowback against her, like millions of snake emojis, hashtags calling her a lying snake, calling for refunds for their donations, etc. And I personally perceive the snake symbol as in this specific context, as being sexist. I know that not everybody agrees with me. I know that you don't, Cody. We can get into that if you want. But even outside of that, to me, the immediately jumping to the conclusion that she is the liar is kind of sexist. It's a he said, she said situation, and immediately people assumed that she is the wrong party in here. And I think that the truth of the matter is that it's something that's much more gray than that. I think that they're probably both right in their perceptions of how that conversation went. There's room for that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, like, we're not going to get super into what we've already talked about. But I think that a lot of my pushback was about the media and how they framed it and how they continued to frame it.
Yeah.
And how her response, like, during the debate, was sort of an embrace of the framing that CNN was going for.
Right.
Like the, so Bernie, you're saying you didn't say this. Yeah, I didn't say that. So Elizabeth, what did you say when he said that? And her response was, well, I disagreed. So that's accepting the narrative that they're framing to get that answer.
And I think, my response to that is like, yeah, I mean, if that's how she interpreted this conversation, if that's how it plays out in her mind, part of me is like, why should she be expected to like back down from that? She's angry.
But if she didn't leak the story, then it was just a leaked story about her like private conversation. So is it a kind of thing where she's like, I'm mad about this and I want to talk about it?
Well, everybody's talking about it and she's being put on the spot to talk about it. And I think that the whole conversation about it has been unfair, and she's probably even more angry. I mean, that's reading into it. That's my interpretation. Because to me, I'm just sitting here imagining myself in that conversation, and you're talking to one of your dear friends where you're very much aligned, and being told as a woman that you can't do something that you really want to do, it's humiliating. I would feel humiliated if I was her and this story came out. And in that moment with somebody that she really respects, I bet she was pissed. I don't think she leaked it. I know that she talked about it like a year ago, and then this story gets circulated again now at this point in time. I've also said this on the other show. The accusations that she did it on purpose seem really far-fetched to me. Maybe somebody pushed it from her side, but we don't see any evidence of that from what I can tell. And she has run a campaign that is so staunchly avoided this kind of a conversation that it doesn't make sense to me, and it's hurting her. It's hurting her. It doesn't make sense to me. I hear your argument that like you feel like she should have squashed it at that moment. Yeah, maybe. But I don't know. I don't know that I would have wanted to. I think that I would be a little bit fed up.
I mean,
and that's my my perspective. I guess
by not squashing it or not like by accepting their narrative, like later that day, CNN had a headline like the candidates debate on whether or not a woman can be president. And like literally nobody was debating that.
And that's obnoxious. Again,
and even like we've had this conversation about what Trump will probably do in the election, as we saw in 2016, yep. 2 weeks before this big thing about this private conversation between friends broke, Joe Biden on camera in front of reporters for people to see said the exact same thing.
Yeah.
He said in 2016, Hillary Clinton had to deal with a lot of sexism. I won't have to deal with that. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And nobody cares. Nobody brought it up.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you about that. I think that that's bizarre and blatant moves by the media and all of this, and they've certainly exacerbated this. But I want us to be able to see it happening and to not immediately jump to attacking the woman. And then women and people online that support them, the woman in question. Like, it just feels very ugly to me. And personally, especially in the thick of all that, I felt like a little bit betrayed in a way. And that's the extreme version of it. You know, when I think about people who I assume in general we're allied with, are incapable of like taking a step back and thinking about it from a female perspective, this whole situation, just this situation, mm-hmm. it bothers me. And I've said this before. That's also this reaction kind of makes me think that, yeah, a woman can't win in this climate if the people on our side are so quick to jump to these conclusions about her.
Mm. Yeah, I think a lot of it might come down to the fact that, like, we're all having this filtered through the media that exists in this country, the mainstream media that exists in this country, which is not only bad at journalism, but also exists to stoke division and disagreement and discordance, because that makes for better television.
Yeah.
And I think that's a major factor in why this got out of hand as quickly as it did. And I do think that it may have the impact of actually kind of exaggerating how difficult it is for a woman to become president in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say it's one of the few things that makes me happy that the media ecosystem in this nation is collapsing in on itself like a dying star, because it's very irresponsible.
Yeah.
And I do think it's making it hard for anyone to really know where the people of this country lay on issues like this, and also is making, you know, is creating these sort of conflicts that would not, in a responsible media ecosystem, this never would have been a story.
Right.
And I think that's frustrating. It's as frustrating as, for example, the media's obsession with the fact that Bernie Sanders used a Mannlicher Carcano rifle to shoot JFK when he was driving through Dallas that day.
Yeah. They won't shut up about
it. Yes, it's not it's an Italian-made rifle. It's not an American-made rifle. But if you look at what was available on the civilian market at that time, it
and
was
what
a
was
more
accomplished
affordable
with
working
it,
man's
you
option
know?
For shooting the president.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. Bernie Sanders, you know, is going to pick like the affordable working person's choice, you know,
exactly.
Even if that means not buying American. And I, for one, support that.
Thank you, Robert.
His campaign slogans, not me, nobody, nobody's president. I'm a president killer.
I think that we should transition to talking a little bit about Bernie Bros, since we've been talking about online climate, whether or not they exist.
Yeah.
Cody and I have slightly different perspectives.
Well, also I'm going to speak about this, but also because I sort of to your point where you're talking about like you felt sort of betrayed by the reaction to the situation. I've also talked to a lot of women who felt betrayed on the other side of it.
I'm sure. I certainly don't
Warren
speak for all women.
No, right. Well, right. So I just wanted to make sure that I'm sort of communicating
that you're speaking
too.
For other women.
Exactly. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you, Cody, for framing it like that.
Yeah. No problem.
No, but it's true. I don't want to pretend like I represent everybody. That's just my perspective. And a lot of people that I speak with, and granted, that's because, you know, I have my friends, like the people that I'm aligned with and you communicate with. But it's difficult because, again, Bernie and Elizabeth are two great candidates. And I think a lot of people that are still waffling between feel attacked for still liking her, and it becomes difficult for a lot of people, the idea that it's difficult to say like that they're going to capitulate or whatever and start supporting Bernie, and that's not fair. It's not good, you know, but I worry about this dialogue alienating people, which again is a good transition to talking about the whole Bernie bro.
The Bernard brothers.
Phenomenon.
The alleged phenomenon.
The alleged phenomenon.
Brothers.
Cody does not believe that it exists or well, to the degree that
no,
we believe.
Let me clarify.
Yes, please do. I'm sorry.
I think that sexism is a problem in America and the globe and also that every candidate has very passionate slash toxic supporters.
Sure.
And I think that, like I said, sexism is a problem. And you can see it, and we'll talk about this a little more later, but you can see it from everyone. You can see it in every person's campaign, all their supporters. I think that the Bernie bro specific thing is blown out of proportion, like we've talked about, by the media. To create a divisive narrative and also because they hate Bernie Sanders specifically.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with you that the media exacerbates this.
Like I can't.
I don't. But I have such a different experience than that. And I think so many other people do that it's really hard to accept that because I feel it very intensely. And I know that it's a problem across the board.
Well, this is right. So
hold on, let me just finish this point really quick. I know that it's a problem across the board, and that sucks. We need to stop it. Stop talking to each other like this. But specifically, there are a lot of people that feel, and the Bernie, we don't have to call them Bernie bros. That's an offensive name now. That's become pejorative. But like, you know, there's this, an aggressive type of reaction online, particularly. And it's very alienating. It's very offensive. It's hard for me to accept that it's all just the media because I see it every day personally. And I know that a lot of other people do as well.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I mean, again, I'm not speaking for, I've just seen so many women online who are like Bernie Sanders fans who have just like screen grabs and screen grabs of the exact same thing that you're describing.
I'm sure.
And it's hard to gauge, like I just see so many takes of like, yeah, it's a problem in general, but it's worse with Bernie Sanders. I haven't seen, there's no data on that. It's all.
I mean, how do you?
Well, how do you gauge that? It's all just sort of this anecdotal thing, and I think that having that claim and like you'll see, especially in the past like week and a half, as Sanders is growing and growing in the polls and popularity. There have been like 5 articles about Bernie bros.
Sure. And
it's
think
like
that's
all they have.
Yeah.
And that's why I resist it so much, especially the name, because I hear like what
How about
you're
Bernie
saying.
Stands?
Well, no, it's not even because it's not. I don't think it's a Bernie thing. Works. I think it's just like there's
well,
sexism and misogyny. And
yeah.
Some of them happen to support him, but it's not a him problem. He's like the only candidate who's actually
it is
like
a him problem. He
but
talks
he's,
about
but he's
it.
The only candidate who's said, like, don't do it. He's the only one
yeah,
who even speaks
great.
Out about it.
It's great. I'm not blaming Bernie. I'm talking about us. What can we do to control ourselves as we navigate the worst year ever? If you do not want that label, what can we do? Not to put that all on you, universal you. What can we do to detract from the potency of this story? How can we behave better to each other? And it's not just Bernie people. Sure. How can we all do that? But it's indispensable. Beautiful that this exists because people are passionate about their candidate. And I love that, especially the people from marginalized communities that see him as like being a real shot. I get that. But there's a problem right now with how we're talking about it. And yes, the media is exacerbating it. So let's take that power away from it. Let's stop doing it.
Well, so I guess that's – I mean, I don't disagree with anything you said. I just think that part of the problem is – literally the term and what we're talking about now.
So
it's still being framed like this Bernie bro thing. In 2008, there were articles about Obama boys.
Yeah.
And like, again, it's not. And but then there are also like all articles about like Clinton supporters posting child porn in Facebook groups to get them banned and things. It's everywhere. It's not this thing. I think part of how we talk to each other better is not.
It is
using this framework that the media is starving for.
Except that it's for a lot of us, it feels much more potent within the Bernie movement. And again, I understand why, and I understand, and you see it differently. I mean, if you were supporting Warren, maybe you would feel more of that heat online and you would have a different perspective. But I accept what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from. We have to take a break now. This has been so fun so far, though.
It's one of the best days of the best year.
It's been as fun as when Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz's father teamed up to give this nation a little shot in the arm.
Just a little, how do you do?
Cool. You know, products and services.
Yeah.
And then more of this.
Ooh.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Oh, cool. We're back from that break. More of our conversation. We're going to move on to other fresh new topics soon. But real quick, Cody, why don't you talk to us about that New York Times article?
Yeah. So this is a recent New York Times article that came out about Bernie Bros, and it's one of, again, many that came out recently because they're all very, very scared. And I think it's very indicative of kind of the problem with just, like, accepting this narrative wholesale. And I personally am just resistant to it because I know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
This New York Times piece about the Bernie's army of trolls is written by three people. It seems like a lot for an article about Bernie Bros, but that's fine. And there are just some passages in there that I think are very interesting. But one of their main sources for this article was a woman named Candace, and it was about all the abuse she's gotten, harassment. And one thing they don't seem to mention is that she is like a notorious troll who harasses people online. They're like writers for other publications who've talked about how she, after they blocked her, she would send them emails and go to their other social media platforms to like harass them, which again is interesting. So I'm going to read these passages real quick from the article. But it's interesting that they didn't point out that she does the exact same thing.
Right.
And then like vicious, like sexist things too. There's a lot of sexism there. But this passage describing the behavior, they swarm someone online. More commonly, there is a barrage of jabs and threats, sometimes framed as jokes. If the target is a woman, and it often is, these insults can veer toward her physical appearance. It just sort of describes this behavior of Bernie Bros specifically. And then there's this one short paragraph. His allies also argue that online combat is not unique to the Sanders side, with some high-profile women who support the senator saying they've been attacked too. And I think the way that they've phrased this is really interesting because on the one hand, you have this article describing a behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they do this, they do this, they do this, they do this. And then there's this very short passage, and some people say that it's this. It's a descriptive, factual statements, and then this sort of passive, like, and then some people say that it's actually another thing.
Okay.
And when you literally using a source that engages in that exact behavior.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that a lot of this, like this is representative of what you've experienced or like the kind of messages you get. But the way they frame it, there's this one passage describing John Legend, how he's going to vote for Warren. And he's like, hey, and you know, all the, you know, I'm going to vote for whoever in the primary. So everybody chill. To quote the New York Times, this did not necessarily land with his intended audience. Quote, some of you millionaires need to realize that many of us actually need Bernie Sanders to win the presidency, one account replied. We can't just chill. And that's like their example of like.
Yeah, they should have showed all of the snake poop emojis and stuff.
Sure. but even that, so like the snake, I mean, we don't need to talk about that much, but sending snake emojis to a politician is like, I don't know, they're a politician.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the context, but we don't need to get derailed by that.
We don't.
This article, I see what you're saying.
It's one of the things that's frustrating to me about coverage like that is that it sort of acts as if, like I've had responses where like I express an opinion and get swarmed by a bunch of assholes who are being wildly unreasonable and aggressive about it for basically every opinion that I've ever expressed. Like there's communities of, like, if you take a stance on something on the damn internet, you're going to, like, there's a good chance you'll attract a bunch of harassment from it, because that's the internet. If you attack, for example, if I insult Elon Musk, I will deal with Elon Musk fanboys in my mentions. If I insult Andrew Yang, I will deal with Andrew Yang fanboys in my mentions. Mm-hmm. And neither of those guys get the New York Times being like, this is a problem that you know, Andrew Yang has to address, or this is a problem that Elon Musk has to address. But it's treated as if it's like some unique aspect of the Sanders campaign, when I don't think it is. I think it's just the fact that, like, it's fandom. Bernie has a dedicated fandom, and dedicated fans will do abusive, shitty things to people who attack the thing that they the thing that they're a fan of. And that's true of Bernie. It's also true of, for example, Star Wars.
I mean, I agree
or Donald
with that.
Trump.
It's true. No, you're both right about that. But I think it's undeniable how much of it is happening right now around this conversation and around Bernie. I mean, yes, you put something out there and you're going to get responses from people. You're putting it out there, and who knows who's going to read it. And some people are going to agree with you and some people aren't. It feels unique to me. And I've been on a woman online for a long time now around this conversation. I mean, just the nature of a lot of the responses. How about how many people respond to me saying that Cody needs to talk sense into me? That's fucking sexist. I'm sorry. I don't get that from other people and other conversations and other candidates. Anyway, now I'm getting worked up about it.
I hear you. I think that there wouldn't be that different of a reaction if you were a man and we had this disagreement on and talked about it on the podcast a lot.
Maybe. I don't know. Because Katie, in your soft brain, have Cody talk some sense into you, does not feel necessarily like phrasing someone would say to me.
I see soft and smooth brain. To every person on the internet. It's like a thing that people say on the internet.
I do not mean to make this heated and personal. I'm sorry for that. But I agree with you, and I think that and I do think it's a problem across the board, and that's why I said what I said earlier, which is that I want it to be better within the Bernie camp, but I also want it to be better across the board with all of us in this conversation. But I think that we should move on to other topics. How do you guys feel about that?
You don't want to have more fun with this?
I do want to. I want to have more fun with other things.
Oh, okay. All right.
Let's talk about some endorsements that they both have been getting, because they've both had a big week.
A lot of people have attacked Bernie for accepting the endorsement of the Dallas Book Depository. But, you know, it's done a lot for him over the years.
The only endorsement they've ever given.
The only endorsement they've ever given. And I think we should be able to move on as a nation at this point.
I accept that. I agree with you. Let's talk about the Des Moines Register, because Warren scored that one this week. It's a pretty big deal, considering that the Iowa caucus is just days away.
Yes.
You know, at the top of the article, they have a list of the highlights, which include many of her ideas aren't radical. They are right. She must show that her vision will lift people up rather than divide them. She cares about people, and she will use her seemingly endless energy and passion to fight for them. The outstanding caliber of Democratic candidates make it difficult to choose just one. So I know you've got some thoughts on this. I'll just start by saying I know a lot of people have pointed to the many of her ideas aren't radical line as, you know, kind of proof that she's the more centrist of the candidate. And I guess that's true.
Of the two.
Yeah. And then as we're going to talk about their different policies soon. And I think you'll see that they aren't that much different. There's some like key differences. So to me, that she's not that her ideas aren't that radical is like, well, she's really not that different than Bernie.
Yeah, I think it's more just like the phrasing of like, clearly like they're trying to be like, don't worry, she's not that radical. She's like, she used to be a Republican, guys.
Yes. I think it's important to keep in mind that this is like a much more conservative state and, you know, so they're trying to appeal to who the voters of this publication and who vote there. Yeah. But yeah, go ahead and say what your thoughts are.
I just wanted to make a quick note about the Des Moines Register endorsement and I guess endorsements in general. So the past candidates who have been endorsed by the Des Moines Register, I'm going to go back to like late 80s, I think. Paul Simon, not who you're thinking of. Paul Simon you're thinking of. Paul Simon, Bob Dole, Bill Bradley, George W. Bush II. I guess George W. Bush. I'm going to start this list again. Hold on. Paul Simon, Bob Dole, Bill Bradley, Bush 2, John Edwards, Hillary Clinton in 2008, as well as John McCain in 2012, Clinton and Rubio in 2016. Oof. So of all of those, I think only two of them actually won Iowa, like the Iowa caucus specifically. And of all of them, only one was the president. And we don't need to talk about the 2000 election. But and this isn't to say that like it's not cool that she got it. There's a video of her learning the news that's actually very, very cute.
She's cute.
It's like she's like really excited and it's like great for the campaign. But and so I'm not saying like it doesn't matter. I'm just saying that it's not like this big thing. And endorsements in general these days, like the New York Times endorsement where they split it down the middle and they chose two.
Stupid.
And like they treated it like a reality show, even though they hate the reality show president. This and sort of a little bit about what Rob was talking about earlier and just sort of the slow deterioration of these institutions and journalism in general, I think this is a good example of it. Where like, does it really matter? Did the endorsement move the needle at all for Amy Klobuchar? I doubt it.
Maybe a few people.
Sure. But like just in general,
do endorsements at all.
Right.
Do anything.
Like, I know, like 538 is doing a whole, like, these are your endorsement points.
Right.
But it's 2020. Donald Trump became the president.
Right.
Does any of this matter?
Right. Another point, another thing that was included in this endorsement, a qualification. Some of her ideas for big structural change go too far. This board could not endorse the wholesale overhaul of corporate governance or cumulative levels of taxation she proposes. While the board has long supported single-payer health insurance, it believes a gradual transition is more realistic approach. But Warren is pushing in the right direction.
Yeah, basically, we're the New York Times, and we don't support doing anything.
Real. Well, this is the Des Moines Register,
that
but
sounds,
yes.
That sounds, but, that sounds consistent.
You wanted to say this note that you have?
Oh, yeah. I think and we'll probably talk about this a little bit more in
it's
like,
amazing.
The policy-specific stuff. But like the phrasing, pushing in the right direction, I think is a big distinction. There's between pushing in the right direction and like doing the right thing and just being like, no, this is what we're going to do. We're going to fight for this thing that is right, as opposed to we're going to push in the right direction. You know,
I get it.
It's sort of the Buttigieg plenty bold kind of stuff.
Yeah, I get it. I get why that's annoying. And I agree. I don't like that part.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Bernie and Joe Rogan. Joseph Biden at Rogan. of course, earlier this week, Joseph Biden at Rogan endorsed Bernie Sanders.
I will say real quick, he didn't necessarily endorse him. He said, quote,
I'm probably going to
vote for Bernie.
Yeah. We can play the clip, but we don't need to.
Yeah. And like, it's, you know, obviously like that's showing support and he went on to talk about it. But like this, like, oh, he endorsed him.
No. Okay. But
that is an endorsement.
I'll probably vote for him. I don't know if that's an endorsement.
Kind of is. But it's not quite.
He
expressed support.
Joe Rogan endorsed him.
Yeah.
Point taken. And I don't have a problem with that. That's great. The conversation about this was confusing online because like that's not a problem.
Yeah, it was so frustrating.
I don't know that people are.
It's great.
I don't know
actually.
That people are.
It's
why
proof
are we
of
debating
what
that?
People have been saying for a long time about
well,
his broad
you know,
appeal.
Like, okay, so a lot of the blowback against this came from the fact that Joe Rogan has said horrible things about trans people in the past.
Yes.
And so there were folks being like, I don't know if I'll vote for Bernie now that he's touting this endorsement. I it's one of those things where I didn't see what Bernie's the way he touted the endorsement, so to speak, was very carefully not endorsing Joe Rogan. It was quoting Joe Rogan saying something nice about Bernie, which I see as fine. Like, I get why people are angry at Joe Rogan. I am permanently angry at Joe Rogan. But I think it's short-sighted to take issue with a guy that influential being like, yeah, vote for Bernie Sanders.
That's a
positive thing.
That is a positive thing. I have a slightly different perspective in that, I mean, I'm not extraordinarily pissed at Bernie for retweeting that. I don't think it was necessary, and I think that, again, we can't possibly speak for everybody. I've seen I've tried to just watch the conversation unfold.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's I don't think that he gets more votes by sharing it. I think that he offends a lot of people within his base. And a lot of people aren't. But a lot of people don't care. But there are a lot of people whose existence Joe Rogan kind of denies and that support
right,
him.
Yeah.
And I don't see what is gained by that, because anybody following Bernie that likes Bernie isn't convinced by Joe Rogan. The fact that Joe Rogan said that he's probably going to vote for him, great. That's all
right.
As far as it needed to go.
Right.
Him
saying that on the show is what does it. Also, like the conversation that they had when he was on and like the comments in that. It's like, okay, yeah, clearly like it's an effective thing.
Right.
And I think, and like I totally understand. And like you said, like I've mostly just been listening to what people have to say about it. I've seen a lot of people in the trans community have issue with it and a lot of people not have issue with it. I think what the better move is, because it's not like, oh, look, we got Joe. It's presenting what he said and saying, look at how convincing we are. It's not saying that, like, oh, we got Joe and we like him, which they didn't say, but it's presenting it like, look at how effective this is.
And I posit that's something that surrogates and what people can do, like AOC.
Well, right,
somebody,
and they'll point to it.
And they could say something like, since there's a little bit of distance, they can say something like, we understand that Joe Rogan we don't agree with him on all X, Y, or Z, but here's how we can bridge the divide.
We'd love to have AOC on the show so she can talk to him about these issues or
something. But we didn't do that. That's not what happened. So that's all. That's my whole perspective. But I also don't think that it makes – that it's inherently – just everything should come down a notch.
Yeah, everything should come down a notch. I think it is a good point to say, look at how convincing we are. There was no compromise there. The platform hasn't changed. His opinions haven't changed in order to get Joe's endorsement.
Right.
He stuck to his guns, and that's what was convincing.
Yeah.
I think that's the argument there, not necessarily lifting up this, like transphobic guy who's had a lot of like pretty horrible people on his show to sort of spread their false message. Also, just real quick on this issue, this is again, like you said, like bring it down a notch, everybody. And it's another example of Never Trump Republicans, centrist lib pundit folk to pounce on an issue and use like the trans community and other communities as like a cudgel to beat Bernie Sanders down.
Yeah, I've seen more rage about this, particularly from like kind of centrist Democrat media people online, than over any of the actual awful things that Donald Trump has done to harm trans people in the United States.
Right.
It's perplexing.
Even like Hillary
about, like,
Clinton
centrist
had
Democrat
transphobic
responses to this.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton had transphobic comments.
Yeah.
Like earlier last year or like late last year. But that wasn't
it's
an
not
issue.
Like it, yeah. It.
I get
even
it.
Like a few days ago, like right after this happened, Pete Buttigieg got endorsed by Charlemagne.
Explain.
The king of the Holy Roman Empire.
Yeah, that's confusing.
Hold on, not Charlemagne the historical figure. Talk about Charlemagne the God. He hosts the Breakfast Club.
Okay.
Radio stuff. Big Pete fan, video of Pete with him being like, look, I got Charlemagne. And it's just sort of, it's literally like.
How did that happen?
I don't know. But it's like, it's even a farther
That's
step
baffling.
From what the Bernie campaign did.
Sure.
It's him literally in a video being like, look, I'm with him and we're doing an event together. It is him like really touting the endorsement. But like, he's talked so he said so many transphobic things in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2 years ago, he has this whole thing about how it's okay if families want to keep their bloodline pure and like compared it to like dog breeding and stuff.
Ew.
Just like some pretty like racist transphobic stuff. Nobody cares. People aren't making hay out of this. They're not being like, Pete needs to denounce this. Pete.
But
and it's because
I don't think that. Yeah, I hear you.
And it's just another example of like the using these little things that our conversation is worth having.
Yeah.
That the media pounces on and views it as like, we finally got them.
They are a big problem.
It's very frustrating.
We got to take a quick break for more products and services.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together. Oh.
back from that little break.
I love breaks. Mm-hmm. I love breaks as much as Bernie Sanders loves taking the succession of American presidents into his own hands with the cold steel of an Italian rifle.
Back into the left.
I wanted
back
to,
into the far left, right?
Back into the far left, which is mm-hmm. actually not what happened after the Kennedy assassination. Anyway, I don't know. Before we like move on, I kind of wanted to talk about something that frustrates me just about the whole Joe Rogan debate, which is there are no debates on the other side about what works. It's just purely a matter of taking and holding and exercising power. And I'm not advocating like an embrace of soulless sociopathic politics of power, because that's not what I want the left to be. But I think a little bit more pragmatism is warranted, to where we can say, like, it would be one thing. I wouldn't be suggesting this if, for example, Sanders had softened at all his attitudes on trans rights to get Joe Rogan's endorsement. But he didn't. He just connected with Rogan and his audience about other things that they agreed on. And I think that makes it like that's how what we should be doing. Mm-hmm. You're not going to, by the time 2020 rolls around, convince everybody that it's reasonable to be pro-choice, or that, you know, trans people's rights are as important as we think they are. As long as you're not conceding those points, if you're getting those people to buy onto other aspects of your agenda, then it allows you to continue to support pro-choice, pro-trans politics, while also making other things happen and protecting all of these different communities. And hopefully over time, changing the opinions of these people.
Sure.
Right. That's the ultimate goal. You bring them in.
I agree. I totally agree. And that's why I found the whole conversation to be frustrating. Like, well, we're focusing on the wrong things here. Let's talk a little bit about their platforms and the ways that they're different and everything on a few of the key issues here. Cody, you have been digging into this a little bit. We want to start with the wealth tax.
Yeah. I mean, this is, I think, just a representation of sort of the difference between the two. You know, this Warren's support of a wealth tax is great. Bernie's is a little more aggressive. Mm-hmm.
So that's a conversation of like what, to me, they're probably both off-putting to certain sects of the population.
Yeah. His kicks in at 32.1 million. Mm-hmm. Hers kicks in at 50.1 million. I do think it's interesting if there's certain people I've noticed leaning towards Warren, and then you look at their net worth and it's in that range. Mm-hmm. It's less than 50. It's like, oh, you just don't want the thing to kick in. And not like, maybe not, but like, that's a fun little game that is worth playing if you notice a rich person leaning towards Warren. Also, his plan is a progressive tax. So it slowly, you know, it goes up as the wealth increases. So it, you know, 50 million is 2%, and then 250 million is 3%, 500, 4%. Whereas hers is just 2% and 3%.
Sure.
Difference there.
And obviously, I would
his
like
goes up to 8%.
Tax them. Tax the fuckers.
Yeah.
You know, there is a conversation that I don't know. I don't know how much more likely people that are on the fence are to vote for Warren on this issue versus Bernie. You know, like how does this affect the electability question and all of that? I wish, you know, because I think that both of these plans would be great. But obviously one is better.
Right. Well, I think also like we consider like who we're even talking about, like in terms of millionaires, I think it's like a little less than like 5% of the country. So in terms of like what kind of voters it attracts.
Yeah.
I guess we need to worry about that really? And even like, I mean, we won't get too much into their Wall Street stuff, but like, I think there's some hedging of bets and sort of like, okay, well, if it's going to be Bernie or Warren, her, because it's less aggressive.
I think there's one other dimension to it, which is that, like, obviously, I am more supportive of Bernie Sanders' wealth tax because it's more aggressive. But I think based on the latest statistics I saw, Warren's polls much better. And it actually, a majority of Republicans are supportive of it. And so I think if the goal is to start wealth redistribution and show Americans that it can work and that it can fund these programs that we've been saying are necessary for so long, it's possible that Warren's strategy is a better tactical move because it's easier to get, for example, conservatives on board with and then convince them, no, you guys actually like having free health care and stuff, and this, you know, doesn't harm it. And then we can, you know, push for more aggressive wealth taxes down the line.
Right.
I think that's an important kind of dimension.
I think that with a few of her policies, that seems to be the conversation that we'll be having. And honestly, the conversation that I think that we should be focusing on instead of stuff that...
about how the candidates are or are not arguing over whether or not a woman can be the president.
Right. You know, it's the same thing with the Medicare for All. Like, what is the best path to getting these things? And I know that also the conversation about whether or not we can trust her gets wrapped up into this as well. But yeah, I think that's a really great point, Robert, and something that I am still grappling with and trying to think about and see. I'm so excited to start seeing how these primaries are going to be playing out. And to get start to get a real grasp on like what is resonating with people outside of just statistics. Do you want to talk about more things?
Yeah. And I think this is also like, I think there's something to consider in terms of like aggressive or not aggressive and how that appeals to voters versus how passable it is as actual legislation. And getting conservatives to go along with it. And like,
yeah, it's all part of the same conversation.
And like we've talked about before, of basically, no matter what you propose, it more than likely that you're going to get less than what you propose just because of how our system works. So pushing for as far as you can and then having to be like, all right, well, it's not going to be as much.
I guess. But, I mean, I hear that. I hear that. It's just so hard to know. talk some more about more things.
There's
Medicare for All.
Medicare for All, I think, is probably the biggest one and sort of speaks to, this sort of general issue, like what you were talking about of like, Robert, how a case could be made for doing something to convince people that going further is good. Where, like, for her Medicare for All, which she does still say she supports, is to pass legislation to, like, bring the age down, have it people up to 18.
And that's just for the first two years. And then after that, transitioning.
Well, after that, there'd be another, like, vote to expand it. There's just a lot to say about that.
There's a lot to say. And that's another one that I'm not sure still where I fall as to what's the right path. Can we trust her? That always comes up. Can we trust that that's what she's actually going to be driving towards? I don't see any reason not to, but I understand that concern. I personally don't see any reason not to. And I hear you. Like, is that shooting ourselves in the foot with this conversation, with this fight?
Or when you require midterms to go your way too,
right?
In order to pass step two.
Or is it realistically, that's how it's going to take, even with the Bernie presidency? How is he going to get us there? Is this a more palatable plan? It's an actual plan. I'll give her that, you know, as to how we're going to achieve this thing that the majority of Americans want. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. It's a debate worth having. I do question, just like if you're starting at, we're going to do Medicare for All, and then the plan comes out and it's like actually this several step plan that requires this one thing first and then this, and again, like midterms going well, and then also sort of talking about how like, well, we're not going to get everything done that we say, that's politics
immediately.
Then like personally I'm like, well, just say you want to do the thing and do that. Because then I at least believe that you want to do that, as opposed to the sort of like, well, maybe.
Let's talk about some more things. Student debt.
Yeah. Student debt, and like again, this is like they generally agree on a lot of things.
Yeah.
They want, you know, get rid of private prisons. Like a lot of the big issues that are now standard for like being a Democrat or progressive and like wanting, like, we want to get rid of private prisons. We want to do this. We want to do something about climate change. It's just the degree and the plan and
how they plan to distribute the money,
right?
How they plan to,
like Bernie wants to get rid of all student debt. Elizabeth Warren wants to get rid of most of student debt, like up to, I think, 75% of people, people up to $50,000 of student debt.
Right.
That's a distinction. They're both good. It's how far you want to go. Similarly, like with climate change.
So they've got different types, different amounts of money that they're proposing, but a different approach.
Yeah. Like Sanders is all in on like this idea of a Green New Deal. Like, here's our climate change legislation. Mm-hmm. Not that Warren isn't like for that, but she sort of packages a lot of it into other plans where she's like, and when talking about the military, we're going to have climate change.
I love that. I would like there to be more money in her plan, but I also think that that's a really effective and important approach to this, is to integrate all of these things into different areas of life.
For sure.
It's in everything. It's a part of everything.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that, like, whenever they have debates, someone ultimately is like, why aren't we talking about climate change? Or, like, why aren't we talking about climate change in relation to this question? So 16.3 trillion versus 3 trillion, I think, is the plan difference.
Right.
And I agree. I think it's important to have climate change in mind in all these other departments and plans. Like, when Trump's new trade deal came out, Bernie went a whole thing about how, like, this doesn't mention climate change once.
And that's one of the main things that I've been disappointed about with Warren, is that she did go along with it. And I get it, like, the hassle of passing a new trade deal down the line and this whole – I understand the reason why, but I do think that, yeah, let's not pass one until it includes it. I agree with that.
Right, yeah. And, little things like that. And related to climate change, like, I think another good example of kind of what we're talking about, Bernie's talked about prosecuting ExxonMobil and really going after these companies. And Warren hasn't not done that, but her approach is more about creating rules that if they break them, they will be prosecuted, which is good to do.
I feel like it's kind of the same thing, ultimately. Like, what is she have a quote here? If bad actors like Exxon break the rules and deliberately lie to government agencies, my plan will treat them the same way as the law treats someone who lies in court, by subjecting them to prosecution for perjury.
So that's great. And this is a part of her plan. Like, she's going to put these rules in place so that if they lie and do X and Y, then they will be prosecuted. But I do think there is a difference between saying, like, we're going to put in rules, and if they break them, they're going to get prosecuted. And, they've lied to us for decades, and we're going to prosecute them.
I feel like it's pretty – I hear you. I think it's a minor distinction. Because it's going to – I understand. It's not a minor distinction. He wants to prosecute them for stuff that's already happened, and she's saying, like, let's move forward with these new regulations in place, and if this happens, then we will prosecute them. Slightly different. They both seem tough to me, but
they're both tough, and that's that's the thing. Again, the thing we're sort of talking about, like, they're both good. It's good that we have these two candidates that exist. It's just the aggressiveness and the not. And so a lot of this sort of brings me to my real thing.
Sure. Okay.
And like you were like, let's look into some policy. Let's compare and contrast. And my thing is that I don't super care. Like, about the very specifics of it. It's very similar to me when
you just like him more.
Well, no, it's not like Medicare for all, and then how are you going to pay for it? It's that, where it's like, I don't care. When talking about, like, a president or leadership, I'm less interested in the very specifics of the plans, because ultimately people, like, you get a policy team together and you make the policy, and it's all based off vision. And that's, I think, that's the thing that I care more about, is having vision and commitment to these things.
Makes me a little nervous, but I hear you. I understand what you're saying.
Like, the role of a president, a leader. It's like it's why nowadays, in 2020, you might hear the phrase, healthcare is a human right. And you wouldn't have heard that 5 years ago. And there's a reason, and it's because vision and leadership has pushed us to all sort of adopt that.
I do think that the next step to enacting that vision is a plan.
I don't. No, I agree. I'm just saying that, like, the specifics of that plan
don't matter to you.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they mean less to me because all the things that we're talking about now, like, oh, we got to do this, we got to do this, we got to do this. I'm not saying Warren hasn't supported that, but I'm saying that the reason we're talking about them and the reason that these ideas have taken over the Democratic Party are because of this vision.
Because of Bernie's vision.
I mean, he's the person that has been.
I'd say that phrase.
Not him specifically. Obviously, there's a movement behind it, but, like, I think that has a lot to do with
the healthcare thing.
Healthcare thing. Just in general, I think that when we're talking about, like, what's this plan? It's like,
well,
I just want a person that I believe.
But you can understand.
A person that I believe believes the things that they say and have been saying for decades.
But you could probably understand, I imagine, why a lot of people do care about having an idea.
And I'm not saying but he has plans. I'm just saying that personally, I'm like,
Yeah. So before we leave here, I wanted to give room for, other points. Specifically, Robert, you wanted to talk about the blood quantum stuff. And I think that's pretty important to get into before we end this.
Yeah. And this is obviously something that there's no comparison with Sanders because Bernie Sanders did not labor under the misconception that he had Native American blood for decades.
Right. Yeah. He just killed a president.
But
he is on the lam.
He did kill President John.
That's why he does so many rallies because he's on the run.
It's possible.
Just constantly evading the police.
You know,
he's hiding from the cops.
I gotta go in a minute. They're after me.
Bernie just wrote some weird erotic essays when he was younger. And we did talk about this a bit on the Elizabeth Warren episode, but I think that some of you guys wanted to hear more about it, and I agree. I agree with you. So let's do
it. And this is I wanted to point out, like, I'm not doing this as, like, an attack on her. I've stated my opinion on, like, her actual level of culpability, I think, other than it being a really dumb, incredibly dumb decision. Like, I don't think what she did was, like, horrifically immoral or cruel. I think it was pretty growing up where she grew up and in a community like the one she grew up in, I think it's a pretty, in knowing the era she grew up in, it's a pretty common mistake to have made. But a number of Native American folks reached out on Twitter after the last episode where we talked about this and wanted to make sure that I kind of pointed out the context of why it was troubling.
Yeah.
Because there's some really important information about kind of the way Native Americanness is determined legally. That what she did fed into that goes back pretty far, and it's kind of important to talk about. And it goes back to something called blood quantum, which is a system that the federal government put on tribes in order to limit the number of people who could call themselves Native American. And a number of Native nations do not use blood quantum, but like the Navajo Nation and the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians and a number of others still do use it. How tribes use blood quantum varies from tribe to tribe. The Navajo require about 25% of Navajo blood in order to be considered Navajo. Turtle Mountain requires 25% of any kind of Indian blood. But blood quantum minimums, like one of the problems is that they were essentially set up back in the day by the United States in order to ensure that there would kind of always be a declining number of Native Americans. So if you've got 25% Navajo blood and you have children with somebody who has a lower blood quantum, then your kids by definition will not be able to enroll as Navajo, which is like one of the issues with the system. I found an article which interviews a woman named Elizabeth Rule. She's a doctoral candidate at Brown University, specializes in Native American studies, and she's a Chickasaw Nation citizen. And she calls this a colonial catch-22. Basically because, like, there's kind of no perfect way to deal with this problem because it's been sort of enshrined in law for so long. It's a really thorny issue, and I'm not going to be able to give, like, a super complex, like, explanation of it. One of the problems is that it doesn't go along with how these actual tribes for thousands of years prior to the United States, like determined membership in the tribe. Mm-hmm. Most of them didn't. Obviously, you couldn't do blood tests 1,000 years ago. So like that wasn't even really a part of it. Like there's a long history of, for example, freed black people being fully incorporated into Native American tribes. And then when sort of like the blood quantum thing like came into being because of the United States government, these guys were basically kicked out of the tribes that they'd been fully accepted in because their blood wasn't Native American.
Right.
And so like it's a very like complicated issue. And it basically guarantees that over time, Native Americans will basically breed themselves out of existence, which in a fortunate coincidence means that the federal government will no longer have to continue like maintaining the legal obligations that they have to the treaties that they signed
fortunate
with these tribes if they gradually die out as a result of this blood quantum thing. And so kind of by and again, this is like a very rough overview of what the blood quantum sort of is. I think I'm going to do a Behind the Bastards episode on just sort of how tribes were treated by the U.S. government at some point that goes into this in more detail. But by specifically sort of trying to prove her claim to indigenous blood or indigenous heritage by taking a blood test, Warren sort of bought into this system, which is very problematic and very heavily debated. And so that's one reason why she attracted a sizable amount of criticism. But it's also sort of evidence that, like, you know, again, her belief that she had this blood comes down to or had this heritage comes down to some very incorrect ideas about Native American heritage that have been passed through my people for a very long time, particularly in Oklahoma. And her sort of going with a blood test and John Lovett's suggesting a blood test in order to prove her heritage is you know, buying into this long tradition. And so it's definitely a dumb and lame thing that she and her campaign agreed to do. But more to the point, it's like there's an incredibly long and lame and shitty history that is attached to all of this. Yeah. And one of the deep frustrations of this election is that if Elizabeth Warren continues to be a major force in the election, and I like her politics and I hope that she is a part of it, people like the president will continue to drag. It's just going to continue to be a real pain in the ass for the Native American community. And that's frustrating.
It's going
to
get grosser and grosser.
And again, we didn't talk about this nearly enough when we did her episode. But I do think we mentioned it. Like that's a big caveat for me with her is how she handled this situation.
Yeah.
I think she made a mistake. I think that she could have done a better job owning up to that mistake.
Addressing it. Why,
And if she does get the nomination, if she does continue, I think that we would need to see that because there's a lot of communities that are, you know, are rightfully upset about it. And this would be a good opportunity to draw attention to an issue that most people don't understand or are aware of. And so there's that. I am also worried about how, we're talking about things that the president is going to use to weaponize against his opponent. This is one of them. So it is absolutely something that we need to keep in mind. I understand in a way, you know, like there's a problem. It sucks. Our society and the time that she grew up in and where she grew up in. But, you know, like, and she grew up with this narrative and she grew up with this story that was false of who she is. I don't, you know, and she benefited from it and she's white, you know, she is. And
that's super lame.
It's super lame. And we culturally have learned and changed. And, you know, you'd like to think that if she was a kid now, maybe it would be a different story. This isn't making an excuse. I'm just putting it all into perspective. But again, like I said, I think that she handled it wrong.
Yeah. And like being able to handle those kinds of things and address those issues is really important leading up to this year. Like they're going to throw so much stuff at everybody. How that's handled, I think, is important. Like, you know, like we're not going to talk about Biden or anything, but, you know, when he's criticized, he freaks out and he can't handle it. He like grabs people by the collar. He's like, hey, man. And like how the criticism is addressed, I think, is going to play into it quite a bit.
So in terms of like, just because I don't want to be just stating what I think are different Native American attitudes on this, I actually want to quote a Medium article I found from someone named Eli Tatosian, titled Warren and the Blood Quantum, that kind of goes into at least this one indigenous person's perspective on all this. And like how it's impacted their life. Quote, along with criticism of Warren, a wave of general distrust and prove it began to spread through the United States, placing a negative spotlight on indigenous folks. This is after her blood test. Suddenly, the question of what percentage are you held more weight, and not in a good way. Mm-hmm. Ann Kate E. Cannon describes that one day, upon being asked how Indian she was, the man asking her stated that he was just trying to make sure you're not another Elizabeth Warren. Warren's claim created more pressure than ever for indigenous folks to prove their ancestry to people who were not entitled to such information. Mm-hmm. Cannon states that Warren answers the dog whistlers in a conversation about indigeneity without indigenous input. She makes it seem like the percentage question is something that actually deserves an answer. Before Warren, it was possible to brush off the percentage question, to chuckle and chalk it up to a poorly phrased remark from a well-meaning person who just doesn't know any better. Now that blood quantum has been solidified as a political maneuver, I feel like the percentage question has lost its innocence.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Whether intended or not, justifying the thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. It is absolutely a factor as to why I might not vote for her.
And it also, plays into, it's interesting. There's that old clip of Trump is in court about his casino stuff. He's talking about Native Americans, and I think it's like about a claim to land. And he's just like, well, they don't look like Native Americans to me. Mm-hmm. And it's just his, that like.
Oh, yes, yes.
You know, remember that? It's mm-hmm. like sort of like playing.
Yeah. Yes.
Playing into.
Remember when Donald Trump said that in a court of law?
A couple of times. Really, he repeated himself a bunch, actually. It's very weird. But just sort of like playing into his narrative and being unable, not his specifically, but like playing into it and not being able to really address it and justifying where he's coming from.
Yeah.
Is going to be an issue.
Okay, well, we're getting the wrap it up sign by Sophie, so that's what I'm going to do. I was going to do it anyway. Mm.
We are going to wrap it up like Bernard Sanders wrapped up the presidency of John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm so glad you brought that home,
Robert. Scoped rifle.
So eloquently. So poetically.
Thank you.
You guys can find us online on Twitter and Instagram at WorstYearPod. Please find us online on Twitter and Instagram.
Find us online and yell at us.
Please.
Be mean to us online.
Please be mean to us online. No, a lot of you guys have been really kind and cool.
Like profoundly abusive to me online.
Mm-hmm. To them, not to me. Only nice things
kink,
to me.
And I need it.
Say what you need to say. Try to be kind about it. to everybody that's reached out over the last week, I really appreciate you. You're wonderful.
To everyone who hasn't, go fuck yourself.
No, you're fine.
I mean,
live your life.
Yeah.
Cool.
Boy, howdy.
See you guys.
I hope that all of this joking about Bernie Sanders assassinating a former president has not harmed our chances of interviewing him.
Well, I mean, he needs to answer for it someday. So,
Bernie, come here and clear up the record.
It's out there. It's out there, Bernie. It's out there. All right.
All right.
It's out there.
Correct the
rumor
record,
is
Bernie.
Being discussed.
All right. I'll see you guys next week.
I tried. Yes. Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.